This is TWiT, This Week in Tech, episode 52 for April 30th, 2006. Bandwidth for the TWiT.tv network is provided by AOL Radio at AOL.com/podcasting. He's back from Brazil and looking sharp. Got that Brazilian wax, I see. John C. Dvorak. Hello, John.
Ouch.
What were you doing in Brazil?
I write for a magazine down there called Info, which is short for Info at Zemi. And it's I'm the one of the lead columnists, and they had their 20th anniversary party, so I went down there and helped them celebrate.
Now that sounds like a good party. Robert Herron is also here. He had some advice on what to drink in Brazil. What was that you wanted him to?
Ooh, what was that?
Cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-nanya.
Cachaça.
Did you have
cachaça?
Any? Cachaça. Did you have any, yeah. John? Did you try it?
I'd have that stuff around all the time.
Oh. With a good bottle of Bordeaux, there's nothing better than cachaça.
It's essentially the Brazilian's version of rum.
Oh.
Only it doesn't taste like rum. It's a distinctive flavor, and all the variations all have this unique taste. So it's made with an alembic still, and it's more like a, it's kind of like a, say like if rum was
like a brandy.
Yeah. This would be like an Armagnac.
Oh, all right, the Armagnac of rums.
Yep.
David Prager is here, who probably has something to add to this conversation as well. Hello, David.
Hey there. I'm all about different types of alcohol.
This is turning into Dig Nation.
Oh, God, I don't know. No, in Dig, they'll be talking about the illegal alcohols. What is it that they can't sell here that's got wormwood in it? I can't think of it.
Absinthe.
Ask Kevin about absinthe.
Actually, you can get wormwood-based absinthe in the United States. That law changed.
Oh, really?
Not as powerful as it used to be. But, yeah, you can go get it, and there's various brands available.
Isn't it highly poisonous? Isn't it just...
No, it was over. That's exaggerated.
I think it's because it's hallucinogenic, and they don't want people hallucinating.
No.
I think that's exaggerated, too.
Well, John, we'll let you... You can try it for us and let us know.
I've tried it.
Oh, all right. Did you do the whole thing with the, you know, the green lady and the you pour it through the sugar?
It's overrated.
And all that?
Let's just put it overrated. It was something that was cool to learn in 1900.
Yeah, the turn of the century. Here we are talking about turn of the century technology. Big story, of course. It was kind of a slow week this week. If this is the biggest story, then that really proves it. Nintendo and the Wii. Actually, I put an article in the show notes that I thought was kind of right on, saying that this is really just bogus attempt to get some publicity as we approach E3, and there really
bogus
is nothing.
Attempt by Nintendo.
Yeah, there's
a
just
bogus attempt. How can it be bogus? We're giving them publicity now.
It worked. You're right. It's not bogus, but so what? I guess there's no really. There's nothing new to say except that they've changed the name from Revolution to Wii.
Well, I think. Main problem, aside from the fact that I'll even agree that Wii is kind of a stupid name, is that they have a significant amount of branding that's vested in Revolution. Everyone is familiar with Nintendo Revolution, and everyone seemed to like it. So what basically I think a lot of people have said about is that why throw Nintendo Revolution away?
Wii is friendlier.
Wii.
It's a more friendly name than Xbox. It's a more friendly name than PlayStation.
And since it is, in fact, a kid's...
Well, look what happened with Windows Me.
Me and we. Oh, it could go down. It could be like the Coke classic of technology, me and we.
Well, I think Nintendo stands by the merits of their system as a gaming machine and not a home media center.
Aaron McKenna, writing in Tom's Hardware, said that we is not even pronounceable in Japanese. That the Japanese can't even say it. Although they like it in France because it means yes in France, right?
We.
Oui. C'est oui. But he also points out there's nothing really to say about it, and it's just attempting. I mean, look, I guess E3 is May 9th. Microsoft's going to try to get attention by announcing a Blu-ray for the Xbox 360, but all eyes
HDVD.
Are really... it's HDTV, not Blu-ray.
Oh, no. Not with Microsoft.
Oh, that's right. They're, well, I can't follow it all. Sony is Blu-ray.
No,
Microsoft is HDDVD. Although a lot of computer manufacturers like Blu-ray because it stores more on the disk. I mean, it's a better data format, right?
Supposedly, you know. But what's available and what are the costs per disk? That's always the big question for blank media. None of this stuff is available yet, although the the drives are supposedly coming in another month or so.
Actually, I'm told that you can. In fact, I think you can buy blank Blu-ray discs, writables. They're $20 a pop.
Okay.
Rewritables or just one write once?
I think there's just one write right now.
$20.
I could be wrong, but my understanding is it's a one write verbatim disc. There, I think it's 25 gigs for $19.
And how much data do they store?
25.
Well, that's not much. And Blu-ray is what, 47, 40? How much is
that? Blu-ray will be 25.
That is the Blu-ray. It's a 25 per layer. In the
per layer. Okay.
There's going to be two layers, but with these first writables, I think there's only one layer available, so it's going to be 25.
And what is HD DVD? How much does that store?
Is it 15 gigs?
Okay.
And then each layer. And then, so they were looking at a three-layer disc for 45 or combinations thereof.
Right. Something like that. It's kind of a confused mess right now. In fact,
the players are out, though. If you can find one.
Is there a Blu? I know HD DVD is out.
HD DVD is out. Yes.
Blu-ray is still not out.
Yeah, no. Blu-ray is another month and a half. Sorry. Blu-ray is another month and a half. The HDs are sold out.
I just got a flyer in a magazine. It's May 23rd, and it's official Blu-ray disc.
Oh, really? They moved it to May 23rd?
So there's actual advertising out in the place now.
Yeah, but you know, they had to place that at 3 months.
I mean, I just
months.
Got a brand new home theater magazine. And
cool.
They had to place that at 3 months ago. I think that's when they thought they were going to have it out, right? What's the turnaround for ad time in magazines? It's months, right?
No, not anymore. Actually, the ads go in last.
Oh, all right.
So, and this was one you could actually pull out of the magazine, of course. So.
Oh, if it's a blow-in, that could go really at the last minute.
Oh, all
totally.
Right.
All right,
are most of these magazines, like PC Magazine, using Quark to put all their publishing together, or what? Do you know?
I was at a magazine the other day, and they were using Quark. And which they, I think, still most people do, but everybody seems to be talking about or moving to InDesign, and I think that's really the future of this stuff.
Oh, absolutely! They use Quark because they have used Quark. They have Quark. They, you know, there's, you know, it's just there's a lot of inertia, but InDesign is so much better. Although, ironically, Quark came out in an Intel dual binary before they were able to do that with InDesign. So,
well, before Quark, it was PageMaker.
Right, PageMaker's gone.
Well, you know, Quark, you know, people don't like working with them. They're quite arrogant.
Oh, really? Is that part of the problem?
Well, I mean, yeah, I've found it to be the case.
InDesign is from Adobe, of course, and you know, if you're already in Adobe house, it's an easy thing to do. I shouldn't say PageMaker's gone. Adobe owns it. I don't know if they. I mean, I don't know if people still use it, but it's there.
And actually, I think FrameMaker's also owned by Adobe now. I think that's still available.
Wow.
I think book publishers still use it.
Well, and that's the thing. If you've got a workflow all tied into one particular program, it's a lot to change it over. How do we get to this from Blu-ray? I don't know.
Boy, I don't know. That's a good one.
we're talking about the putting.
Nobody knows how.
So HDVD's already got some movies released, though, I believe.
Yeah. It's just the hardware right now. I haven't seen it for sale since the initial launch, those initial 10,000 units.
The Toshiba is sold out.
The interesting press release that came across my desk this week was the announcement by Warner Home Video that they will be producing all their DVDs with DVD 9 on one side, and the flip side will be an HD DVD disc format, so you can flip the thing over and use it in the future.
DVD 9 is Microsoft's DVD Extreme format, is that right?
Well, no, DVD 9 is just dual two-layer.
Oh, standard DVD.
Yeah, standard DVD. So
it's standard, that's what it's
DVD.
Called, DVD 9?
That's the term for the dual-layer version.
Okay,
you
so
have DVD 5 for single-layer, DVD 9 for dual-layer.
So they're going to have hybrid DVDs then. They'll have one that plays in the old player, and you flip it over, it plays in the new player.
Yeah,
that's pretty cool.
I think it's not only cool, but it's a stroke of genius. And this is not really nothing new. If you remember when there were no such thing as a DVD 9 early on, just a DVD 5, they used to bring out, in fact, I have a few of these, a disc with one side would be normal 4x, whatever the ratio is, 4x3, and the flip side would be a letterbox.
Right. I have a few of those. Netflix, I still get them from Netflix. From
right.
Time
so
to
they,
time.
They have the equipment to make those, and you can use the old equipment to make the new HD DVD, so that makes it easy to do this process. And so I think this is like really a dangerous situation for Blu-ray.
I want that just for comparison purposes. It'd be nice to, you know, if you have a good enough TV, compare the quality
flip it over.
The DVD format versus HDVD.
Are Blu-ray and HD DVD so different that you couldn't do the same thing with them?
Well, the problem with technically the HD DVD is the old-fashioned style of making this, where the reflective coating is deep inside the plastic, usually all the way on the other side on the back. Although you can push it down a little bit, or because of these dual flippables, they can put it in the middle. But the Blu-ray, the reflective coating is on the top. And in other words, where the pretty much where the Blu-ray is hitting, as opposed to on the underneath the label. And I was thinking about that myself. I think it's almost possible for the Blu-ray to make the same kind of thing. But the problem there is the equipment, because the compatible equipment for HD DVD makes it kind of simple and brain dead to do this flippable.
Similar to the old DVD format.
Right, it's the same equipment, the same stamping equipment.
Right.
With Blu-ray, it's new equipment, and to get it, you'd have to have a hybrid type of gear that I just don't think it's possible.
Sony did do something similar with SACD, where they would, on the top layer, it would appear to be a standard CD audio disc, but if it would read below that first layer, it would be the SACD part of the disc, and that was kind of neat because you'd have backward compatibility on the single side. But I don't know if they can do that with video or not.
Yeah, there's some real issues. When we, a year ago, were talking about this, it seemed very clear, and everybody seemed confident that there would be dual format players, so you wouldn't have to worry about it. You just buy.
Yeah,
whatever.
You know, that came up in the conversation a couple of times, and this happened on Cranky Geeks too, and I think we've talked about it on this show a couple of times.
What happened?
Well, what happened, it turns out that if you've licensed Blu-ray, there's provisions that don't allow you to do the other format. If you're a machine man. In other words, that's what happened with Samsung. Samsung said, yeah, we're going to do a dual thing, and the next thing you know, they pulled the plug on it. It turns out that because they signed up with Blu-ray, they can't make a dual machine because their contract, which was non-disclosed, by the way, which is why nobody knew about it, because of some non-disclosure agreement, it wouldn't allow them to make a dual machine. So even if somebody makes the mechanism, it doesn't mean you can produce one legally.
The greed of these companies is going to bite them in the butt now, because the whole thing's going to fall apart. Well, who needs it? I mean, no, I don't think American consumers are going to go for this.
Well, you know, LG claims that they're still going to do one, and I don't know how they're going to get away with it, but that's what they say.
I saw some specs for a Pioneer Drive, too. I don't know if it's a rumor or not, but the generation coming up this October, November, and it literally supported every disc format. And it was a PC drive, granted, right. But HDVD, Blu-ray, CD, DVD, everything.
Well, you know, I had a conversation, curiously, that you mentioned Pioneer, with Pioneer just like a week ago. The guy who's the head of the Blu-ray division.
Andy Parsons?
I don't know. I can't. Maybe.
He's a good
guy.
Anyway,
he told me that there's no way they're going to do a dual thing, and he thinks it's a bad idea. And in fact, both sides say that they think it's a bad idea, but who knows? That may actually even be in a non-disclosure agreement. You have to say
that.
You can't trust anything anymore.
You have to say it's a bad idea. Why would it be a bad idea? I don't understand. Because it costs so much?
I was baffled by this.
It's a good idea. It's what consumers want.
Was he smiling when he said that?
You know, here's what we know. The conversation went like this. It would be a bad idea because it would be bad for retailers because they'd have to stock both formats. And I'm thinking...
That makes no sense.
No, they wouldn't.
In fact, that's the whole point. They wouldn't have to stock both formats.
But no, I mean, it's just completely baffling. If you read the literature, apparently somebody at Sony blew up at a press conference about this idea that you can do a dual format. You know, I don't know. I don't know. Believe me, this is just going to be a bloodbath for about 2 years.
It's just so ugly. And I think consumers are just going to say, throw up their hands. They don't. Why should they have to choose sides in a war they didn't start? I mean, they're just going to say, fine, I like DVD 9. It's fine. I'll just stick with that. I think the smartest thing to do is this HD dual format. I think that's the first smart thing I've heard in this whole thing.
I mean, no single format.
The flip side thing.
Is the official winner, and they couldn't narrow it down to a single format for consumers for high definition next generation optical disc formats. I think it's up to consumers then to wait for a dual format player. For the most people, I mean, if you're an early adopter, you buy what you want.
Well, obviously,
it's
there's 10,000 people who are willing to spend $500 for it, but I can't imagine that a lot of people are going to run out.
Well,
and do
you know,
that.
There's another aspect to this, which is that the computer users need some sort of a device for collect more data than. You know, put them on these discs for storage. But the consumer side, it was either Prager or Heron, I can't remember which of the two, mentioned somewhere that, you know, if you use MPEG-4, you can put HD on a regular DVD with room to spare. maybe that is probably the short-term alternative to all this stuff.
Yeah, I actually have a player in from JVC. It's manufactured by another company, but it supports Windows Media 9 HD and DivX HD formats, as well as being a network appliance where you can plug it into your home network and access your media center PC or whatever.
You know who's going to be the big win? That's who's going to be the big winners out of this, is the computer companies that come up with, whether it's H.264 or Windows Media 9, come up with electronic high-def formats that can be distributed over the net, and nobody will buy a disc again. Right? Or is it just, well, or the no, file size is too big?
Well, there's the broadband issue.
Are the file sizes too big?
Is that
the,
yeah. A little insurmountable.
Files are huge. Yeah. Especially for that kind of quality.
Well, I mean, I'm downloading my high def versions of Lost in 24. They're about 350 megs for 40 minutes.
Yeah, but then, you know, you do it overnight. Even, you do it a BitTorrent. It's not a big deal.
And some of the estimates I've seen, just simply going from MPEG 2 to MPEG 4 for high definition, it's not a doubling or a doubling of savings in terms of space on the disk, but it's, they're saying it's more of a maybe a good 20% at this point as well. So it's either you take the high bit rate like HDVD is doing with less compression, or for some of the early Blu-ray stuff I've seen, they've used significantly more compression, but at slower bit rates.
Well, I'll tell you what, you're right about the bandwidth. You see this from Forbes, that they estimate that right now YouTube is spending $1 million a month on bandwidth alone.
Which, that is insane. How much money did they get in VC?
That's it. Well, they got 11 at that rate. They got 11 months.
So they got well under a year to survive.
Yeah, they got $11.5 million. If their burn rate for bandwidth alone is $1 million a month.
What is
it. Wow?
What's their money making scheme? Is it all they're supposed to support themselves on advertising or what?
It's what everybody's doing. If you build it, if you get eyeballs, you'll somehow make.
So it's just like the .com bubble 1.0.
Yeah.
For YouTube.
They got to sucker somebody into buying them. That's what their scheme is.
But I don't think anybody's going to anymore, because I think people are realizing how much this stuff costs. I mean, when you see a story in Forbes that says $1 million a month in bandwidth, Yahoo's already burning from Flickr. They're not going to spend more money knowing that it'll cost them $1 million a month just to keep the site up.
The only problem is that obviously it's proven that there's a massive demand for this.
Oh, yeah. It's going to break my kids' heart. They live on YouTube.
Well, what is MySpace spending?
Oh, it must be similar, right? They don't do video.
Think about the advertising involved on MySpace.
But all I see on MySpace is like datesomethingrather.com.
MySpace is doing, I think, pretty well. You know, there was a good article I just read, was it in the Times? Yeah, it was last Sunday's Times, about MySpace. You know, one of the saddest stories about MySpace is the founders, when Murdoch bought it, the founders didn't get any money. Or it got a very small amount of money. It was the company.
Well, then they screwed up.
Yeah, no kidding. The parent company, Murdoch, in order to keep everybody happy, gave them bonuses, multi-million-dollar bonuses. But the payment, the big payment for MySpace, what was it, $500 million payment, went to the parent company, not to the founders. However, I think MySpace is going to do just fine. I don't think there's any question MySpace is making money.
Every story I see about MySpace is about sexual predators. Every story.
Oh, there was just, you know, and it's kind of bogus. I just read an article by a mother.
I read it too.
Yeah. What was that, the LA Times? I can't remember where I saw it.
It was the LA Times. She was talking about how she struck a deal with her daughter, and she has to monitor her daughter's space on MySpace.
Which is right, by the way. If your kid has a space on MySpace, you should be able to look at it.
And that she was able to almost foster a better relationship with her daughter by both of them. Like, her daughter helped her mom create an account on MySpace.
There you go.
And I don't know, it's all
togetherness.
Pretty and sweet. But
what, communicating with your children works? I don't know.
This is nothing new. My wife did the same thing with my son when he was, in high school. He was on a... She'd go on LiveJournal where all these kids
LiveJournal was the MySpace of a couple of years ago. Absolutely.
Yeah, and she would just look and see what all these kids were. You know, if he's going to hang out with somebody, she could do the research. And I think it's a great thing. You can kind of, it's a funny kind of spying, but it's no different than seeing who shows up at the door, you know, with a bone in his nose.
Ladies and gentlemen, that laughter is Patrick Norton, who's just joined us. He's been moving furniture all day, but is taking time out to take his sweat and pain-soaked frame and join us on This Week in Tech.
We must be talking about, like, spying on children in MySpace.
Yes, congratulations. You win the prize.
Oh, you missed the good stuff already.
I don't know. This is like I was on an email thread when I checked in and found out about the show today, I was there was another email thread going around where a friend of mine's like, I don't have kids yet, but I'm looking at this person's, this adult's response to their child's activities in MySpace. And some part of me is like, you know, there are kids who are smart enough to hide it from their parents, and there are kids who aren't. And if you're, you know, if you're talking about who is in the closet giving who, you know.
What?
No, it's just like, you know, yeah.
If you're, if, in other words, if you're not smart enough to hide it, you're nothing to worry about.
Well, yeah, it's just, you know, you guess what? You know, if your your parents don't approve of you having, you know, premarital intercourse at a party at the age of 14, maybe you shouldn't blog about it in a public space.
Yeah,
you
know, on the other hand, if my daughter were doing that, I'd sure hope she blogs about it so that I know, so that I could do something about it.
What are you going to do, Leo?
Spank her. I don't know. Lock her in her room until she's 18.
Well, you know, it's a nice theory.
Good luck. Yeah. Yeah, nice theory.
Well, now, let me...
personal anecdotes out there. Let the employers take a look at that.
I do think that kids need their own place, and I think MySpace is a great place. I'd rather her have her own place to act out than you know, go down to some, you know, sleazy part of town in the middle of the night.
Or just a neighbor's house at a kid, bunch of kids getting together for a party.
That was, you know, last night, actually. And I,
well, I mean, but it's, this is, you know, MySpace isn't, MySpace just makes it easier for you to find these people to, you know, right, all over the country instead of just, you know.
Remember,
in your
I
high
have
school.
A 14-year-old daughter. This is a very sensitive topic for me. Okay. And I love.
I'm not saying it's not sensitive, but I remember, like, you know, one of the funniest conversations I ever watched my mom and dad have was like, you know, or my dad told me about it later. You know, me and a bunch of guys in at senior week had met a bunch of women from the University of Vermont, and we went to a party at their house. And my mom was like, "Oh, you know, I trust there was adult supervision there."
Oh, yeah,
and, you know,
right.
my dad kind of looks at me, and I immediately riff off on, "Of course, mom."
Yes, you know, mom.
Not pointing out that the adult supervision were the, you know, the group of 21-year-old women whose, you know, house we
They're
were
adults.
Having a party at.
That's adult.
They were adults. That's they adult. Were they were certainly in charge.
The word adult is great.
I mean, how many irresponsible adults can we all think of amongst our immediate friends, much less examples we run into, you know, in the news?
I don't know. I mean, I think it's important kids have their own place. I think MySpace is important. I think a lot of the negative MySpace stuff is just hysteria and bogus. But every parent I know is worried in this conversation. I hear it everywhere. Every parent is talking about this.
Well, are you worried as a parent? Are you worried about MySpace itself? Are
No.
you worried about becoming, or are you worried about predatory behavior
Yeah.
of other people?
It's, okay. It's a facilitator for predatory behavior. And you just,
okay.
But it's the same. It's just, you know what? It's the same anywhere. If they're online, even if they're in the mall, it's the same. I mean, it's not any different.
It's True. Also for stupid people. I mean, no, the predators being the stupid people. If you're, it's not anonymous, and the people that get caught are ridiculous. I mean, they say they're damn
pervs.
They say exactly who they are, no, and they're right. wondering why someone yeah. finds them when they go to meet someone at some pier on the beach. I mean, give me a break.
I think
that's okay, man. Just smile.
Every local municipality in the country now has at least one undercover cop in MySpace. The chances are better of meeting cops in MySpace than
I think
are
so too.
Predators.
Everyone's on their own stakeout mission.
Yeah.
I bet you, if you
Don't
went
you
on a mission...
They all have, like, these little funny little dinky electronics crimes units, and that's exactly what they're doing. They're most of the time they're in MySpace.
What are we going to do about cops who are predators?
That's another
that's
problem.
True.
Hey, speaking of which, did you see that the EFF's lawsuit against the NSA and AT&T is probably going to get thrown out because the Bush administration is going to assert the rarely used... state's secret privilege.
No, you're mispronouncing it. That's star chamber.
You know what? You say that, but it's a vestige of English common law.
That's why I'm saying that. Yeah. That's just the spookiest thing I've heard of in forever.
So the rule is, it's like executive privilege. It's just something an executive can assert that he can quash a civil suit. If this civil suit were to continue, it would be at the risk of national security, so we're just going to quash it. And now they haven't done it yet, but they say they will when they file papers May 12th. And the government says the fact that the U.S. will assert the state secrets privilege, get this, should not be construed as confirmation or denial of any of the allegations. But if it is somehow revealing state secrets, clearly the NSA is spying on us at the AT&T, right? Do we care?
I don't know. It's like, you know, if the president does it, it's not a crime. It's very, you know, it's just, there's some spooky stuff going on.
Encrypt everything. That's my motto.
Now, was the EFF trying to find out who was being monitored?
The EFF was suing AT&T over the fact that it's been asserted, although not proven, the National Security Agency was using AT&T's lines to spy on American phone calls and American internet communications. And so the concern of the Bush administration is if this lawsuit were to continue, national security would be put at risk. I mean, you have to read into that, that something will... And we talked about this whistleblower last week or the week before who says he installed this room in AT&T's offices for the NSA. I mean, I think all you can say is it proves it's true.
Just to play devil's advocate for a moment, what if they were legitimately, listening in on the works of Al-Qaeda cells in the United States?
And they didn't want Al-Qaeda to know they were doing that.
Well, they can probably assume it by now, but...
Of course, with state secrets privilege, we have no way to know what they're doing or...
They're only listening in so they can find out who's going to vote against them and then have the IRS come down.
Yeah, it's not such a big deal.
Oh, there you go.
Well, I mean, we laugh, but, for a lot of people, there's a lot of nervous people in the United States that think that's a perfectly reasonable exercise of authority.
Well, and that's the issue. I mean, nobody is against trying to track down terrorists this way. What we're against is the misuse of this kind of power and and the fact that it's not. And now they're asserting this ancient privilege to quash it, to keep
a lack of public oversight.
Now I can get my plug in for the blog at Dvorak.org/blog. But if you go to my website, there's another story that's similar that got very little play, which is the fact that the Bush administration's trying to get make it so if somebody leaks a secret document, even though they wouldn't even know it was secret, a journalist, they just get thrown in the slammer
with no recourse. No,
pretty
habeas.
Much. I mean, this is very Hugo Chavez style. Dealing with the press by just jailing people.
Now, wouldn't the president then be putting himself in danger of going to prison because, I mean...
Revealed a secret. No, he's allowed to declassify secrets.
Yeah, okay, wasn't it finally traced back to the president asking someone to leak that CIA operative's name?
It's okay if he does it.
It wasn't the CIA operative's name. It was the Niger uranium story. But nevertheless, he's allowed to declassify. They say he's allowed to declassify documents.
Well, aren't there channels for that?
He can just do it unilaterally, I think.
By fiat.
You're right.
By fiat.
That's what I heard.
Yeah.
It's good to be the king.
At least that's their position. I mean, I don't think we'll see this go to court, but if it were, I think that's their defense. It's good to be
Valerie.
The king. I thought we got rid of kings.
Ard.
Wikipedia is being used by a political campaign. What a surprise. By political dirty tricksters. We knew that Capitol Hill staffers were making revisions in their bosses' bios to make them better, but apparently they're also going in there and modifying the opponents' bios. The entry for Democratic Representative Jim Marshall of Georgia labeled him, this is his biography in Wikipedia, too liberal for his state. Partly because Hillary Clinton's political action committee donated money to his campaign.
This sort of thing was predictable.
Oh, God, absolutely.
There's just too many, vandals in the world.
Well, in fact, I'm surprised it took them so long. But I guess it underscores the point that if you're getting your information from Wikipedia alone, you probably should consider other sources.
Well, for a while, Wikipedia was turning into quite an extraordinary resource.
Well, it still is.
As long as you stay in, non-scientific, evolutionary, political,
as long as it's non-controversial.
Wait a second.
If you're talking about armadillos, it's good.
Wasn't it the journal?
Well, as long as you're talking about armadillos being created, not evolved.
Yes, good point.
Wasn't there a study done that just as many falsities were found in the average scientific Wikipedia entry is in...
You're talking about the Nature in Encyclopedia Britannica. You're talking about the Nature study, although Encyclopedia Britannica's response was the Nature study was very flawed. What they didn't talk about was the fact that, nevertheless, there were many flaws found, inaccuracies found in the Encyclopedia Britannica articles. Look, at every source has flaws in it.
But most sources can't be rewritten by people at whim on the fly.
Talking about Adam Curry here rewriting his own bio?
Well, Adam Curry, the offices of various senators and
I have a confession to make. I did not know that you weren't supposed to work on your own bio. That is apparently
how narcissistic of you.
The unwritten law of the wiki. Maybe it's written somewhere. I didn't see it.
Well, it's a selfish thing to do.
Well, no, no.
What's
somebody,
wrong with the guy correcting his own bio?
I corrected my bio. It was,
so
it was,
what?
I didn't put a puff piece in there. I wouldn't take out anything that was negative about it. I just, there was a factual error, which I eliminated. That's okay.
Is it going to get to the point where you go to a Wikipedia page and you'll have an option to flick on a little overlay that shows you every edit that everyone made?
That's not a bad idea. I think you can, in a way, if you look at the revisions history.
To a certain
history.
Point, you can track.
Yeah, you look at the revisions history.
I mean, the other thing is, you know, it's pretty easy to have, you know, I mean, most of us can probably come up with at least one friend to make the edits in our bio for us.
Oh, see, now we know Patrick has his friends bid on his eBay auctions just by that comment. I'm kidding, dude.
Well, here's a case. This is an interesting one. Lieutenant Governor Mark Taylor of Georgia, his bio was amended, not inaccurately. It was just extended to include the fact that his son was arrested for drunk driving. Now, that stuff was accurate. They're not denying the accuracy, but it was added because it looked made him look bad, right?
What other reason could there be? I mean, if I'm digging up a bio on somebody, I'm not looking for their children. It might mention that they have a child, but
that's an interesting thought. If I've got somebody who's like who and I don't know anything about the person in particular we're talking about, but there have been political operatives that have made big honking, you know, my family is superior because of my political and religious beliefs, and this is what I am standing my campaign on. And if it turns out, you know, that their own, you know, example, their children are you know, rampaging maniacs.
Precisely.
I think that has a really tremendous bearing on it.
As long as the information is factual, it seems like it belongs, right? His office said we feel that's out of bounds, but it's his biography.
This also can be embarrassing and hurtful the way people do it.
I mean,
and the only thing worse than having, you know, somebody send you particularly nasty emails for somebody to post it publicly like that or to modify a wiki. I can only imagine what, like, you know, our wikis are going to look like in a week after people get through with this.
You know, I guess the real theory is that it's self-correcting, right? That others will come in and fix errors and that it somehow tends toward accuracy. Has that been your experience in Wikipedia, though?
Well, it depends on what you're talking about.
I think a lot of articles it does.
But is the system too big at this point for Wikipedia to have a set of vetted editors that check all changes before they go in?
Well, they do have a system like that. They actually have a deputized group of people who will take responsibility for a certain category of
I mean, the scope
entries.
And size of that site is just
huge.
Incredible. So.
Yeah, you can't police it.
Well, I mean, if I went in there and...
perfect.
If I ran in there and edited that, you know, helium is lighter than hydrogen,
someone would catch that.
Someone would catch it within an hour.
Yeah. On the other hand, the Siegenthaler, you know, bio went for months and nobody picked it up, even though it was obviously blatantly ridiculous.
Right. So I'm almost saying that it shouldn't even make it to the if you click on like a definition for helium or hydrogen, it shouldn't have that misinformation on the top page. That should be something somebody has to look at first before it's applied. And maybe it is that way right now.
Should students be allowed to use Wikipedia as a resource? Some schools
probably
say it's
not.
Some schools say it's plagiarism.
You should be able to use it as a resource. You better attribute what you say to it. Therefore, if it's wrong, at least you say it's Wikipedia's fault because that's how you footnoted it.
Well, yeah, but I mean, there's a difference between Leo. Some schools think of it as plagiarism.
Yeah,
I
was talking to a kid. Whose school, the rules are you cannot use Wikipedia. It will be considered plagiarism if you do.
Well,
which
I think
is, again, an example of somebody who doesn't understand technology overreacting to it.
Well, but also the context is, having seen a number of, you know, junior journalists cut and paste stuff from other places online.
Right.
Yeah, but I mean, was his school saying, don't cut and paste Wikipedia because it's plagiarism? Or were they saying, because there's
any
citing...
Even cited of Wikipedia will be considered... In other words, I guess their feeling is, because you don't know where the information in Wikipedia came from...
Well, this is... You're not talking
kind
about...
Plagiarism. I don't know.
Plagiarism.
I'm not justifying.
That's talking about using Wikipedia as
a
fact
nonsense.
Checker.
It's not.
That would be ignorant of a school's part.
That's fact checking, not plagiarism.
To make a blanket rule like that.
Because there's lots of books that plagiarize.
truth.
Because, look, if a student uses misinformation within Wikipedia, and that ends up in the paper, and the teacher reads that, and they know, oh, okay, well, you know what, this is clearly wrong. I don't know where you got it. It doesn't even matter where you got the information from. It's just, it's bad information, and it's going to reflect on your final score. So. Yeah.
That's true, because, I mean, if you're writing a paper and you say with the atomic, I mean, going back to the molecular stuff, if you say the atomic number of hydrogen is X, you know, I mean, you should be able to check a reliable source. So it depends on if it's a reliable source, not a tool of plagiarism.
That's just one of the things that some of the librarians groups do, is they collect, you know, vetted online sources for information. And it's kind of interesting to watch that process as they go through and try to figure out what's reliable and what isn't online.
And now that we know that nothing is reliable, I mean, how do you judge?
Well, it's also, I mean, you start to look back, at some of the, you know, it's always kind of fun to look at older, you know, nonfiction books, and you kind of think like, wow, you know, this was published and this was relied upon, and you just start snickering to yourself, you know.
Yeah. Here be monsters, right?
That's like the great Woody Allen movie Sleeper, where, you know, they start telling him all the stuff that was wrong, you know, like the healthiest food is chocolate. And
saturated fats are good for you. Of course, that's comedy. That's the difference.
And we can laugh at it.
And we can laugh at it.
Hey, you know, the leading agents in medicine used to bleed people.
That's true. In fact, they're going back to it.
I keep a vial of leeches around just in case.
No, they've gone back to
leeches. Are good for microsurgery.
They're using leeches now. That's
but
right.
But not there's for a, colds.
No.
There's a lot of leeches in Silicon Valley, too, that makes it very usable.
Chinese,
we're talking about the little tiny, you know...
A Chinese businessman has bought a MiG-21F plane on eBay.
That lucky dog.
For $24,000, a good deal.
Holy bargain. Cow.
Well, it must be empty. He says he's going to use it to decorate an empty space at his offices. However, nobody, according to, I guess this was the USA Today, nobody's talked yet to Chinese customs officials about whether he'll be able to get it in.
That guy probably doesn't have to talk to any customs officials.
Yeah, one would think.
There's a number of Chinese businessmen that's pretty much above the law, as it were.
That's right. Apparently,
you'd think he'd be able to get one in country then.
Apparently, there is a Chinese company once bought a retired aircraft carrier. And
didn't they go to business or something?
Yeah, was able to get it in. It was a Soviet-era Minsk-class aircraft carrier. They converted it into a floating theme park.
Wow.
Yeah, the company went bankrupt. The ship is for sale, Robert. You know?
I don't need an aircraft carrier. I could use a submarine.
Oh, maybe we should let Paul Allen.
Go to yachtworld.com. There used to be a bunch of D-class commissioned Russian submarines for sale on yachtworld.com, which I always thought was great. You know, 600,000 and you can own a retired submarine.
Did anybody anybody ever during the Tech TV era get on Paul Allen's boat or his submarine? John, did you ever get invited to any of that stuff?
No, I don't think anybody likes me anymore.
Now, Greg Drebin, our former fearless leader, flew to Moscow, I think.
I heard about that party.
With a couple of other Tech TV execs for a Paul Allen party in Moscow.
Yeah, he does these yearly parties. He, you know, and his boat, you know, he actually has three yachts. The second biggest in the world, the fourth biggest in the world, and about, I think, the 13th biggest in the world. I don't know what you need more than one of these things for, and why you need these
monsters. Because you have size issues?
The Nina, the Pinta, and the Santa Maria. That's the amazing thing.
You must have been looking at the same yacht list that I was looking at that had, like, three of them belonged to Saudi princes, and two of them belonged to Paul Allen, and of the top yachts.
Well, actually, there's a number of lists, but the Paul actually has three. I happen to be writing a blog thing on the fact that on these yachts, because in Oakland, you know, for these yachts cost $200-300 million or more, but in Oakland, the old President Roosevelt's old Potomac.
Oh, that's a beautiful yacht.
Website, www.potomac.org. Or I think it's maybe USSPotomac.org. It's anyways, you can go visit the thing in Oakland. It was rebuilt. It was sold for like $15,000 as junk. And then nobody bought it. There was an auction, and the Oakland Port bought it for this low amount of money, and then they dropped $5 million into it, and now the thing's, you know, actually works.
Historic.
Meanwhile, there's these guys, you're like the biggest yacht right now, supposedly, motorboat, is Larry Ellison's new boat, the Maltese Falcon. And this thing is just an unbelievable monster. And it's, I don't, you know, meanwhile, and I think it must cost $300-400 million for this thing. And by the way, the rule of thumb is, you can tell I've been reading too much about this stuff, but the rule of thumb is that whatever the price of the boat is, if it's like $500 million, it's 10% of that per year for maintenance. So
that's incredible.
Besides the fact that you have to have a
40
full
million
crew
a year. Sure. And Paul Allen apparently has a recording studio with a studio musician sitting waiting for him in the hull of the boat at all times.
Yeah, Larry's got that beat. He's got a full basketball court in his.
Yeah, but does awesome. He have Kareem Abdul-Jabbar waiting for him at all times?
Well, maybe.
Possibly.
In Michael Lewis's book, The New Thing, he talks about Jim Clark, who also has a yacht fetish. In fact, was in a competition with Larry Ellison to have the tallest yacht. And Clark had one with the highest mast, and I think Ellison beat his by a foot or two, and now Clark is building a new one.
I mean, those guys were into fully automated systems,
actually,
too, for the boats, weren't they?
Ellison's big boat is a stink pot. It's not a sailboat.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's not
Jim Clark's is a sailboat, but it's apparently the biggest. It's 300 something feet.
It's so tall it can't fit under the Golden Gate Bridge.
Well, it does on low tide. It supposedly can.
Think around the turn of the 20th, beginning of the 20th century, that everybody looked around and talked about Lipton and Shamrock and the America's Cup.
Oh, we're
boats,
right.
And being
we're
like,
right there.
Yeah, you know, being like, you know, what's this guy doing? You
this
know?
Is the Astors and the Vanderbilts all over again. I mean, I'm surprised they don't have, you know, Newport, Rhode Island style mansions on the. I guess they do.
Hey, does Greg Norman do something besides play golf? Because he has a boat that just blows me away. He had it built, I think, a year or two ago.
He probably
$70 million craft.
He probably with endorsements. That just shows you how much money there is.
So it's a lot of golf accessories.
It is enormous. I mean, I don't know how long the actual boat is, but he has like a 42-foot custom boat that can be dropped off the main boat for fishing, and like another 30-foot boat, a 22-foot boat, two 18-footers, and a rescue boat. This thing is standard once you get over the 100, 200-foot level. It's just gorgeous, though.
Now, you've got to read about Paul Allen's 400-something-foot boat, four times bigger. It's got an 8-man submarine on it.
Oh, you're talking about the octopus.
And two helicopters. Yeah, the octopus.
Yeah, Greg Drebin told me the reason Paul Allen told him that he built the submarine is that when he goes scuba diving, he doesn't like to splash into the water. He likes to emerge into the water.
Okay, I looked it up. The submarine has the capacity to sleep 8 for up to 2 weeks underwater. What in
that's
the hell?
That's a getaway, man.
But you know, when Paul Allen liked tech TV the most, I mean, he had one. You know, all the billionaires like to compete in the sailboat racing. And he actually put Tech TV as the main sponsor,
on
I think,
America's
on
yeah,
the
we
sale.
Were sponsored.
I think I think that was so we could write off the donation to the America's Cup.
And that was a really good use of the money for promoting Tech TV. That really went over. Because all those people that are into those yacht races were Tech TV viewers, weren't they?
Well, there was a little debate. They were considering actually buying a NASCAR endorsement, which probably would have been a lot better. But
a lot more expensive, too. No, NASCAR endorsements are expensive.
Yeah.
A couple mil a year.
More than, mil a year for like a bumper sticker on the ass end of a NASCAR
That's the badge on the guy's headrest. No, you want to have the side of the vehicle.
I'm still recovering from Talladega this week.
What happened to Talladega?
Oh, it's just a good race. That's where NASCAR was this week.
Were you there?
No. It's the fastest track, though, in the world, as far as I know, though.
Why can't,
Robert's a NASCAR
why
fan.
Can't these billionaires be competing on the best tech channel that they could build? Why can't there be some, you know, boasting points in that?
Yeah, I wouldn't get them ramped up on this, Leo, because I'm pretty sure they can find prettier, smarter people than us to host on it.
If they throw enough money
at it. You know, if they let loose the funding, I think we're out of jobs.
You're right. Keep them out of the
600 horsepower hydrogen Corvette. That's what I want. Hydrogen-powered Corvette.
He's still back in Talladega, ladies and gentlemen.
The fact that the latest model Corvettes have like 400 horsepower engines and 30 miles to the gallon.
Yep. 500. For the top of line one.
That's awesome. But does it still get like 30 plus miles to the gallon highway?
Who knows?
It seems unlikely.
Ransomware, the latest trend in viruses. Trojan Ransom-A, once run on your computer, freezes the system and threatens to delete files every 30 minutes until you pay $10.99 to the virus author.
This is done through Western Union. I think the executives of Western Union should be taken and arrested.
No kidding. Well, they have to find some business. You know, the last telegram was sent about a month or two ago. The very last Western Union telegram.
Really?
Yeah.
Telegrams are gone?
They're gone.
Yeah, they've been gone for a while.
Not that long. The last one was just a few months ago.
Well,
and they never told anybody they were going to do this, so you couldn't even do a souvenir telegram. It was unbelievable.
Yeah. There are actually been, this is the third ransom Trojan. There was another one called CryZip and then Zippo A, which sought payments of $300. But I guess this guy's figuring out he'll make it up in volume, right? So $10.99. And then and then you get a by return telegraph or whatever, you get the, after you pay the ransom to the Western Union account, you get a CIDN number, which allows you to unlock it.
You know what? You're never going to get the... This is just like the eBay scams that run through Western Union. You pay Western Union, they cash the Western Unigram, and you never hear or never see hear from them again.
Yeah.
There's just... There's no...
I think it's kind of funny, actually.
Don't give in to ransom demands.
I love the $10.99. It's like...
marketing geniuses.
$1 million. Yeah, why 99 cents? Why not $11? What? It's a cheap... It's a good deal.
They won't notice.
or there's some you know, legal reason. If it's below a certain amount, maybe it doesn't become a...
Maybe $11 is the cutoff point.
That would be really funny, actually. Yeah, when does it be? When does the Secret Service and the postal, the post office get involved with wire fraud?
see, Google's got a better deal, according to an article in the Seattle Times. Google's making a ton of money, and I think it's obvious from these typo sites. You know, when you mistype a URL and you get a list of ads, basically Google ads. Who clicks on the ads there, though?
Do they own that generic page that always seems to pop up?
No, you know what? Internet service providers are starting to do that.
Yeah.
Your ISP probably owns that. If you get a standard page, it's not the Microsoft, you know, the one that you get normally in Internet Explorer that says you must have typed a wrong address. Your internet service provider is doing that. Remember VeriSign wanted to do that and started to do that?
That was just so obnoxious when VeriSign did that.
And now ISPs are doing it.
Would there be a way to prevent those extraneous sites from popping up by using a host list on the Windows PC or something like that?
Yeah, I think there would be. Yeah, that's a good idea.
It's just annoying. It's like, even though I've checked, don't automatically search or anything, or don't try to guess what
I agree.
If I type in the wrong thing, give me a 404.
Give me a 404.
Did not resolve message, and I'll figure out what I did, but...
There's a company called Sedo, S-E-D-O, which is a, quote, parking service. They have more than 1 million unused addresses, all of which are on the Google Ad Network. And their rationale as well, we want these pages to function as alternatives to search engines. So when you mistype, well, we'll tell you what you really were looking for.
Well, they're click farming. But, I mean, they're that was farming. One of the things that came out of Web 2.0 is one of the best things I heard there. Somebody's pointing out, you know, you can pay. There's like a certain type of cancer that is the number one or the highest per dollar value. It's like $40
per click,
per click on Google. And what the guy says, what a lot of people have figured out is doing misspellings. You can do similar things, do the common misspellings, and for like one-tenth the cost of maybe the proper term, you can get all the people who can't spell it but are still searching for it.
CANCIR.com, you know, and just buy that and put some links up there, and you make a bunch of money. Melanuma.com.
You're getting more hits on your site than that will ever get.
I don't know.
You're not making a bunch of money.
You don't think? I guess we won't really know unless Google tells us, and I doubt Google would say a word about it.
Well, they lose it on sales, John, but they make it up in volume.
Yeah, I mistyped Logitech.com right now. I transposed the T and the I, and it at GoogleSyndication.com. Is that an actual Google site?
Oh, that's interesting.
Here are some related websites for Logitech.
How did you spell it? L-O-G. Let me try it on my ISP.
L-O-G-T-I-E-C-H.com.
Let me see what I get.
But all the ads link to something called Google Syndication.
Firefox prevented this site from opening a pop-up window, and you're right. I get, here are some related sites for Logitech.com, and these are all Google ads. You bet.
I just went to cancer.com. There's a bunch of cancer stuff. CANCIR.
Yeah, there you go.
Said that.
So that's who these people are.
How are you spelling Logitech again?
Logitech.com. Just transposing the
letters. L-O-G-T... hold on a second.
T-I-E-C-H.
And I'm going to do a... let me just do really quickly a who is on this... Who owns this domain? It's owned by... a company in Tortola.
It says Domain Enrique.
In the Virgin
Inkiri?
Islands. Yeah. Yeah. It's owned by
DomainCar.com.
DomainCar. DomainCar, CEO, Perthshire Marketing in Tortola, the Virgin Islands.
No income tax.
You can tell me they're not making money, John, but I think somebody's making some money on this.
Oh, they're making nothing.
Hey, they have every right to.
Wait a minute.
They do have every right to.
Let me click this link. Oh,
this is. I can't see anybody going to this and going, oh, duh, okay, let me click here and I'll buy a camera.
No, absolutely. Oh, come on, John. You don't think so? Absolutely.
That's why they have every right to. If there's people that think, okay, I'll buy a camera, then fine.
So you mistyped.
Or even worse, the sponsor links are going to go over here to Logitech Click Smart, and then they'll get what, 2 cents from Shopzilla?
There's got to be a reason why all those Viagra ads get sent out in spam. Well, of course, you don't get spam, John, so you wouldn't know.
That's
about
the problem.
This,
John's not in touch with the real world. So this is interesting. If you type cancir.com, you get the quote Cancer Information Center with a lot of links, a lot of paid links, right? And it's very nicely done. I mean, they've got pictures of doctors and stuff. So if you got here by accident thinking you'd typed cancer.com, you might think this is a legitimate, you know, collection of links.
But what if it is legitimate? Maybe it may shoot. You might go to cancer.com with the eye and you might
links.
Well, you might click on something.
I'll tell you why. I'll tell you why it's not legitimate. Because also at the bottom, of the page is an offer to buy the domain name.
I saw that too.
Yeah, that's how much money they're making.
Yeah, well, maybe.
God, will somebody buy this from us? It's such a loser.
Yeah, but if you have, like, I mean, what I've noticed is a lot of, through ISPs collapsing and through people just skimming URLs, people have ended up with a lot of URLs, the rights to a lot of URLs for apps, you know, next to nothing.
It's cheap.
And they farm them out like this.
It's cheap.
You know.
And well, cyber squatting's been around since the day the internet, since the day the web started.
I'd like to know how much Google makes off of this, because indirectly they benefit from it too, right?
I mean, if they're serving up all of the ads,
that's right, or Yahoo or whoever. But I, you know, that's kind of interesting. 30 million.com domain names were registered last month. 30 million.
Yeah, but wasn't that because of the land rush for the .eu?
No, these are .com. Well, it says .com names. I don't know if maybe they are included.
No, I find that hard to believe.
Not more than 90% were dropped. This is, this is according to GoDaddy. Currently, there are 54 million active .com and .net addresses, according to VeriSign.
There's how many?
54 million.
Well, then the 30 million all came in last month. It doesn't sound
like
something
wrong. Well, yeah, there, but how many? Right. There's the difference between how many are active and how many possible combinations you have.
They were registered and dropped. Most of those are dropped. Oh, here's the deal. I get it. Okay. Purchasers can change their mind within 5 days and avoid paying the registration fee. So what people do is they get it for 5 days. They quickly create Google ads on it. They see if it is a valuable.
Oh, no, that's smart. That's good.
See if it's a valuable typo.
I like that.
So they're worth. That's what's going on. There were 30 million registered last month, but only 3 million were kept after 5 days because the rest were garbage.
There's probably a bot that does that. You can just crank out.
Yeah, but 5 days isn't long enough to get enough of a presence on the search engines to actually hit any of these.
You don't need to be on the search engines.
For typos.
It's typos. It's not search engines. It's typos.
People like me.
And of course.
Hey, look at Google's got goggle.com, Google with two O's, Google with three O's, Google with four O's, and Google with five O's.
Which makes
all
sense.
Goes
given
to
that,
Google.
But don't you remember when all like there used to be all those like misspelled sites that were like one letter off, and you'd find yourself at a porn site?
Well, now it's not porn anymore. It's people who just think I'll make a little bit of money. Or maybe these were porn sites and.
They do the same thing to popular porn sites,
actually,
though, too.
That's a really
They'll
good
be misspelled
point.
By one letter and go to some competitor's site.
You're what, right. They used to be porn sites, and obviously the porn stuff wasn't working out as well as these faux sites. That's interesting.
Well, what about that? There was that story last week where there was a piracy organization that basically set up a dummy NEC corporation where they were even fielding...
Awesome.
They were even fielding service calls for products, you know, in any season.
They were commissioning research. They basically set up an entire dummy corporation in China that was emulated, basically stole the NEC logo, the NEC name,
wow.
Set up, like, you know, basically set up an entire false front company.
And what did they, and how did they make money? What was the scam?
What was their revenue model?
Their revenue model was they were selling products pretending to be NEC. They basically set up a completely legitimate legitimate business, except they stole somebody else's brand and trademark.
Huh.
And supposedly the products weren't that bad.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of cases they said they basically
Chinese.
This is why trademark and copyright law is meaningless unless every country adheres to it.
Speaking of China, do you remember last week we had the story about the Chinese dissident that was given up by Yahoo email?
Yeah.
And apparently there's a story going around now that quotes a Yahoo spokesperson, Mary Osako, saying that Yahoo was completely unaware of this case.
Oh, interesting.
And that they didn't turn over any information.
So maybe whose suspect is this Reporters Without Borders, which is the human rights organization that's reporting this. And I was very careful to say that they're only alleging it. I mean, there's no evidence except from this group that this happened.
Well, yeah, I almost wish Yahoo. What is Yahoo doing? This is supposed to be some great directory search engine company, and it took them that long to get to this story about them?
They couldn't find it.
Well,
took them a week
indictment.
To. Maybe they listened to Twit, and it just took them a long time to get around to it.
Came out rocks on through. Edit 28. So.
It's like somebody throwing rocks through your windows. It takes you a week to figure it out.
A little later, they
there's rocks doing in the living room.
Yeah, but Yahoo's got like 42 million windows on 7 continents. It might take a while to notice there's a draft, John.
Well, the story is actually up again because now there's a fourth Chinese dissident has now been sentenced to 10 years in prison. And the same group, Reporters Without Borders, say that it was in fact Yahoo that provided the information that helped jail the dissident.
And of course these are on charges that the Chinese government says are incitement to subvert state power. Which is a crime in the country.
He had set up a
DOC.
Yahoo group called AAABBBCCC. And was using that, I guess, to put, I don't know, to subvert, to get together and subvert. Yeah, the
I wish somebody would create a page that just keeps track of everyone who's been put in prison or, you know.
Well, but this is what we talked about last
week. Give us a status page.
The Yahoo spokesman or spokeswoman in Hong Kong said the company requires strict legal documentation before complying with any official request for information, but we do cooperate with the laws of every country in which we operate. Of course they do.
Do you think the Chinese government actually has the tools they would need to just do this themselves without Yahoo's intervention?
Well, it's the same thing as the RIAA. They just go to Yahoo and say, well, look, we got the IP address. We see this guy doing it, but we need to know what his home address is. And Yahoo knows, I guess. Oh, you're right. I would think that isn't China the ISP, really?
Yeah, you would think that they would just simply
would know
say,
all that
you know
stuff.
What? You give us those tools if you want to do business here.
Yeah, that's probably true.
We don't have to ask
they
you
don't
anything.
Have to ask. You're right. They don't have to ask.
Scary as that sounds.
Steve Jobs says he's not going to run Disney. Sorry, John.
You know, I think he should run Disney. Don't you think it'd be great? I mean, I'm not a big fan of Steve Jobs. I think everybody realizes that. But I think he'd make a great Disney CEO.
Do
because
better
he's
than
got
Eisner.
Some creativity.
Do better than,
better than
Eisner.
Probably,
for sure.
You know what he probably looks at it, realizes it would be like trying to, you know. I mean, trying to just steer Disney is probably like trying to park a super freighter in a tiny harbor. Just no maneuverability, no flexibility. That would be a nightmare group to run.
Apple had its shareholders meeting this week on Thursday, and one of the shareholders said, well, what's the deal? Are you going to go run Disney? He said, no. He said, I don't have time. He said, I barely have time to run Apple. In fact, it's going to give me more time because I was the chief executive officer of both Pixar and Apple, and now I'm just CEO of Apple and a board member at Disney.
So what's he got to do with Apple? He's going to pick colors for the next iPod? I mean,
hey, that's very important, John. I don't think you should diminish that.
Vermilion.
Somebody's got to do it. Black,
well, you know,
white,
since
black,
Steve's
white.
Been on watch at Apple, he's pretty much completely turned around the
you
company,
can't complain
given
about
an entirely
what
additional business model on yeah. top of computing sales. Maybe he's going to turn him back into a computer-centric company again. So
no.
The iPod is an accessory.
Well, he's going to sell Windows. Come on. John knows that. Squeak toys.
Got that squeaky
squeak
toy.
Toys back. It's actually a little Pixar Buzz Lightyear squeak toy that John has. Well, my screen just went dark, so I can't, I don't know what happened here. I can no longer tell you what news is, but we pretty much used up our time allotment anyway for this.
There's
program.
Not a lot of news this week.
It was
week.
A light week. It really was.
I
but
mean,
we managed to milk it for
NAB
every...
NAB and the E3.
Hey, Apple announces a 17-inch... you were at NAB. Anything else you saw? How about that? We have, you know, this week in media, they talked all about the Red camera. Any thoughts on the Oakley Red camera?
I think I got to talk to a couple of the guys. One of the guys that works on the internal team and one of the guys who's going to be a dealer for Red, and it was really interesting to it was really interesting to talk to them, because essentially what they're trying to do is you know, $100,000, $150,000, $200,000 camera for $17,500 plus, you know, $47.95 for the lens, right? And you'll still need some kind of capture device for it, or, you know, some sort of storage device for
so
it.
So is DLTV going to start shooting in super high D?
Not until we can figure out a way to switch it, which may actually be coming from another group later on.
But that's a very good point. This would be good for making a movie, but not for doing a TV show, huh?
Well, it might be good. You know, if they can make it ship, right? If they ship and it works and it delivers the quality they're claiming, you're basically talking about undercutting every major digital, you know, professional camera manufacturer by like almost an order of magnitude.
Absolutely.
Which is insane when you look at it. You know, it's like, you know, depending on how you're pricing it, it's 1/5 or 1/10 of the cost, right? You can use the interchangeable lenses. It's got, you know, of course, you know, if they had one, and if I don't think they had any functioning ones on the show floor, you know, they may have had some they were demoing.
Yeah. So what do we know? What do we really know about the so-called Mysterium, which always seems like a dubious
That's
name.
That's a bad name for
Mysterium
a ship.
CMOS sensor.
I know,
sensor.
But you're going to send it. You know, this is traditional Oakley marketing. These are the guys who invented unobtainium for sunglasses.
Oh, really? Oh,
yeah,
that's funny.
This is part of the Oakley marketing tradition, and they are extending that into this new area. You know, they have always done, you know, goofy names for the materials they come up with for their lenses and their frames. And
I like unobtainium.
I got a couple of meetings. Well, I got a meeting with Kodak, and I can talk to the people at Fovian, and I'll find out what this is.
See what the
about.
Mysterium
is. Yeah, because the
really
Fovian
does.
Guys have really shaken up the world.
You know, that's sad. Isn't it? What the hell happened there? The Fovian was such a great idea.
The military got a hold of it.
It's still a great idea.
Oh, is the military using it?
That's what I assume. Any time a piece of good technology just vanishes from the consumer side of things, the military
is using it.
Something was really good about it, and it vanished.
Right,
and then we get it 20 years later.
Yeah, that might be.
Well,
there was a lot of cool. NAB had a lot of cool consumer stuff, though, too.
NAB was insane.
Sorry I missed that one.
What else? Tell us some more.
Okay, well, one, I realized from looking around at NAB that if you have a large enough potential market, all standards can become successful. Because you started to look around and you realize there's like 19 competing IPTV formats that are destined for everything from, you know, online distribution of video the way, you know, we do it for our shows, or IPTV in the sense of wiring up a college campus or a motel for.
But don't you think
video,
there'll be a shakeout and one or two formats will survive, or you think they'll all exist?
I think there's, at this point, it'll be interesting to see whether or not any one particular standard becomes prominent. But I mean, if you look in terms of there's so many different systems for localized video distribution, and they all seem to have a market, whether it's for, you know, hotels or motels. You know, if you get one good chain of hotels, that might be enough to keep your company going if you have a small company. You know, it was interesting to look at, like, you know, Nutex, like the TriCaster Pro was big for us because, you know, they've added a bunch of features into that that we've been clamoring for, and we'll get our hands on one of those in a couple weeks. It was interesting to look at, you know, listen to the chairman of the FCC talk, who was basically, you know, I'm not going to address whether or not there's going to be more consolidation in ownership, and, you know, the terrestrial radio versus satellite radio. Well, since they're distributing local content on the satellite network and not the terrestrial network, there's, you know, they're within the terms of their agreement. It was kind of funny to watch because there's just so much going on in so many different directions. And there seems to be a market for all of it. That was a thing that kind of amazed me.
Media explosion.
Yeah.
That's great. Except who's going to have time to watch all this stuff?
Well,
that's why you got to use this stuff. I mean, I wasn't there. I didn't see how many different standards there were. But, I mean, the people that have ideas have only so much. Really using them. Like, if someone has something that's being used by people, then it's going to, even if it's not as good as someone else's, the one that's being used is the one that's going to be adopted.
Mm-hmm. Right, but if you look at a lot of the tools that are out there, let's say rendering out video in multiple formats, there's a lot of high dollar tools now that are along with the standards you expect, like, you know, WMV and MPEG-4 and H.264 MPEG-4 and stuff like that are also doing things like, or, you know, like you'd think like Flash, WMV and, you know, some variations on QuickTime would be pretty normal, and, you know, maybe an H.264 MPEG-4, but they're also doing DivX, they're also doing more obscure formats. You know, they're not quite pushing out into the open source formats yet, but they a lot of them actually have the ability to, you know, if you want to render out in 19 different formats, they'll render out in 19 different formats.
Man. That's just because nobody's come up with a nobody's dominant yet.
And
I think consumers want I get a lot of questions from consumers. What format? What format should I use? They don't like this Tower of Babel of formats.
Except for the ones who absolutely positively, I need DivX. It's all about DivX. DivX is the best ever. It's like, right. Well, I use WMV.
Well, everybody has their thing, right?
Or you look at the fact that WMV doesn't work as well on Macs as it does on PCs.
I look at what Rocket Boom is doing with H.264 and MPEG-4, and I just think it looks fantastic. And it's really, they're doing good looking video.
Yeah, and they're shooting it with they're shooting and editing it. They're spending about, I understand, 4 to 8 hours in preparation.
Poor Andrew, video. Their producer's up at 3 or 4 in the morning working on this thing.
Yeah, I wonder how they're getting their bandwidth paid for, because they keep telling people that they have there's no bandwidth costs, there's no distribution costs.
Well, that's obviously not true. They claim 350,000 downloads a day of their 20 megabyte file. Do the math. I mean, it's outrageous.
I wonder if that's, because it's the other thing they do is they launch the video as soon as you open the
web. Yeah, I think that's 350,000 hits to their front page.
Do they distribute it in one format?
They make it available in multiple formats.
Okay, because that's one of the things that we do.
Most people are seeing the front page video, which you get if you go to rocketboom.com.
Yeah, I mean, I know that one of the things that we do at Revision 3, and it's only because everyone wants so many formats, is we try to provide as many formats as possible. Remember when Twit first came out, there was always the person in the corner screaming, Og Vorbis, Og Vorbis.
Right.
And
Og Vorbis slowly returned.
an open source format with no royalties decoding.
Isn't there a video version of Og?
Theora.
Yeah. Viora.
There's Xvid and Theora are kind of like the two main alternate codecs. But we stopped doing Xvid at DLTV because we just had so many problems getting the tools to function.
Do you mean Xvid as opposed to DivX, or do you consider them the same thing?
No, it's not the same. It's totally different.
Yeah,
Xvid is an open source thing out of Germany.
But isn't it an open source version of DivX?
For all intensive purposes, yes.
Yeah, it is.
So you would choose one or the other. You wouldn't do both.
Well, we have people who consider DivX superior to Xvid. We have people who consider the whole proprietary nature of DivX to be offensive.
You can't win.
And then there's still the Theora guys yelling in the corner. And it's like, hey, when we get tools that allow us to consistently produce this, not even automate, just produce it without crashing, we'll be happy.
But Patrick, did you say that you guys don't distribute an Xvid version of DLTV anymore?
Yeah, we dumped it for DivX.
Wow. Because at least as far as I know, like our latest numbers for, say, a video version of Dignation, our highest quality Xvid is the most downloaded video that we have.
We've never actually had more than, when we were doing Xvid regularly, I don't think we ever had more than 2,000 people download Xvid. And we've got a couple orders of magnitude past that on DivX. And that's still not even close to being our most popular codec. Our most popular codec is the iPod video. It's distributed through iTunes.
Because that's what people subscribe to on iTunes.
It's because iTunes dominates, absolutely.
Well, yeah.
It has a heavy share, but it does not dominate. We actually have people who subscribe to the H.264 video through iTunes. But people in some cases, from what I've heard, is a lot of people do it through iTunes just because iTunes is a little simpler or a little easier to find for people than Democracy or FireAnt.
Well, that's why they dominate. I mean, that's my point, is that consumers are baffled by all this.
Well, if you're looking at something like DLTV or Dignation or some of these other tech shows that have video on iTunes, I think their percentage of those numbers that are not going to be as high for the video that's provided through iTunes as would a show, say, like
Tiki Bar.
Ask a Ninja or Tiki Bar, right? Because those are the ones that are, quite frankly, more mainstream, and that's what iTunes caters to more.
But I mean, the DLTV audience is more mainstream than the DivX or than the Dignation audience. It's bizarre.
Maybe a little bit, but like I'm comparing
it by the codex.
I'm comparing it to Tiki Bar.
Right. And then if you look at like overall, it'd be interesting to see like what percentage of, it also depends on whether you're talking about like, commercially hosted, you know, video and websites versus BitTorrent versus, you know, legal movie downloads. Like, the legal movie downloads are all tied up in WMV. Most of the sites that do distribution, whether you're talking about YouTube or Google or insert name of, you know, major media company here, are Flash-based, which is Flash is its own punishment, I've discovered, on a number of levels. When Flash works, it's astounding. When Flash doesn't work, it's complicated.
Well, hey, Patrick, why don't you use Flash?
We do use Flash.
On what? Does Cranky Geeks go on Flash? I don't think so.
You know, you need to go to your website once in a while. That's crankygeeks.com. It's the weekly show hosted by John C. Dvorak.
Really?
At Zip Davis.
How
yes,
do you spell
actually.
That? K-R-A-N-K-E?
C-R-A-N-K.
Yeah, I own Cranky with an I-E. That's my site, and I'll give you some pointers.
Oh, you're making all the money, Rubio.
Yeah, it's called Geeks with a Z.
Cranky Geeks.
Cranky Geeks. All right. I'm glad we're just doing audio for Twit, to be honest with you. It's kind of all gone away.
Has anyone messed with that encoder from ATI that uses the video card processor to encode
it's still in
H.264?
Beta, isn't it?
It's listed on the driver download side now, and I actually have some hardware in the lab to mess with it.
Forward me the link for that, because some of the early testing looked really good on that, but they didn't have it for a number of the codecs we wanted to play with.
Yeah.
That's for encoding, not decoding.
So, Patrick, yes. I'm on the site now. I found it. So it's like WMV, video iPod, H.264, MPEG-4, audio only. I don't see there's
you
no
don't
Flash
see
thing
it on the page
look at
itself.
The big, look at, John, look at the big, giant picture of your face in the middle of Cranky Geeks.
Oh, okay, so
there's a big Flash player at the top of the page
now,
that says, click here to play.
How about giving us some embedded code?
What do you mean?
What are you talking about? It is. You just click to start video. That's Flash.
So I can put it on my blog.
You know what? We'll talk about that on Monday, and I'll forward you the links.
Have a meeting, guys. Why don't you have a meeting?
No, I'm serious. You know, I can forward you the link to that.
Okay,
no problem.
I'm now zipping the lips.
Zip.
Yeah.
No, that's why I like Flash, because you can embed it in anything. Nobody needs a player. They don't need anything. They just look at it,
well,
and there it is.
Yeah, you do need a player. If you want a custom player, you have to have a custom player created. You know, the custom players occasionally get broken.
No, I'm talking about consumers. I'm sorry. You're so focused on your issues as a producer.
Oh, no. But that was what was amazing. Somebody who has consumed Flash, you know, video forever, I mean, other than, you know, the quality issues, I've never had a problem with it until I became a producer and I realized what a nightmare it could be producing Flash
video. Well, and Flash 8 is even better from the point of view of the consumer. I mean, it's just really a good way to watch video. I think it's the way to go, to be honest with you.
Well, if you want to embed it in a page, what if you want to watch it on your home theater system? Or do you want to open up a browser and watch, you know, the stuff?
How many people are watching DL? I'm just curious.
Can you imagine somebody watching Cranky Geeks on their home theater?
How many
people
probably
have a heart attack?
About 15%.
Really?
Really
watching
on
TV,
according to the surveys.
On TVs. Yeah. Wow.
On TVs, on home theater systems.
You know who does? The guy from Hack 5 does. He's got this all set up. He's got Darren's got it so that it downloads automatically in the Democracy Player on his server. He can come into his house. He sits down. He's put a little web interface to the player on his Trio. So he sits down, presses play on his Trio. He surfs to the website, presses play on his Trio, and then watches it on his big screen TV. And he does that with all his podcasts.
But see, that's too geeky. The key is when Apple comes out with the not AirTunes, but AirVideo.
Yeah, no, that's
so you
right.
download that crap your couch and
hold on. But there's already the Spotlight stuff that's in place, and people are already integrating podcasts into the Media Center edition, or videos into the Media Center edition, and setting up so it automatically downloads their... Whoa!
Yeah. Well, shoot, you can use TV Tonic, which is a Microsoft thing, and watch it on your TV. You can use the Xbox 360 as long as you hack it the right way. You can use your old Xbox regular, and watch podcasts on that too.
David, don't say it's not mainstream, and then talk to me about Xbox hacking.
Yeah, but how many people watch it on
no
Xbox?
Kidding.
Well, I'm saying it's all possible, but right now the average Joe can't watch Tiki Bar TV on their couch, and when they can, that's going to be a big frickin' deal.
I agree. I mean, that's what.
Well, then
that's
you have IPTV.
Yeah, we need.
And that's
Sony.
Why Flash video is so great, because you can go to the website and click play. Most places you can't do that.
Right.
Hey, is there a quality limit for Flash video right now? Because it seems like whenever I watch anything, be it YouTube or Google, the quality, frankly, sucks.
Well, that's
the YouTube's, but they have.
I mean,
to,
I know they do
minimize,
that for bandwidth, but
yeah, they're downgrading it. You can make it.
Well,
look
they're downgrading Flash. I mean, they're basically.
I mean, they give you different sizes, but I swear it's the same bit rate and everything, just stretched to bigger sizes.
I think that's what Google's video is doing. Absolutely, it just looks chunkier.
Yeah. But
supposedly YouTube's going through something in the neighborhood of 200 terabytes a day.
Yeah,
right
we
now.
Talked about that at the early
you,
on the
you
show.
You missed that part of it.
Oh, sorry.
No, that's okay.
No, Leo was talking about $1 million a month, did you say?
$1 million a month.
God.
Those electrons are expensive.
Yeah, bits cost.
Bandwidth costs money. But, I mean, David, to go back to what you were saying before, a lot of people are looking at democracy or FireAnt as being an easy way to automate the downloads. And a lot of people are doing it straight into Media Center Edition. Media Center Edition, I think that's pretty mainstream.
No, that's cool. That's cool.
And you guys are talking about hacking a 360. You don't have to hack a 360 if you have a Microsoft Media Center Edition 2005 system on the same network. It just they see each other. They announce each other to each other. It makes it really nice.
Okay.
Yeah. All right.
I'm probably going to cut all this out because do you think it's real inside baseball or do you think people will really
some people would like it.
Cool. All right, I'll leave it.
Keep it in, Leo.
We're just running.
They would have hung up by now anyway.
I spent so long editing last one just to get it down to like an hour 20 because we went for like 2 hours last week. But this one I won't edit. We'll just leave it the way it is and you know, people can edit it with their stop button.
And we can finish at 420. Oh, darn, it's 421.
We're going to... 420. Ooh,
plus,
you
people
see?
Usually aren't shy about telling us when we should have edited stuff out.
Yeah, I know. I was... this is kind of unrelated, but speaking of 420, I can't remember what university it is. I think it's UCLA. Some college posted a website with hundreds of pictures of kids smoking pot on 420 day.
University of Colorado Boulder.
That's right.
There's dozens of photos up there, and like a fifth of them have already been identified. And it's like, man, you can tell who's pissed off their friends.
Well, that's the thing. They're asking other students to say, well, who is this, so they can arrest these people. And it is. It's just.
How do
pure
they know they're really smoking pot?
It's that's pure Gestapo tactics. I mean, turn your friends.
There's no excuse for it.
What they did, is they found out where they were going to gather on 420 day. They closed it down. They put notices. Basically,
they
zip-tied notices like every 20 feet to the fence surrounding the field. And they basically, what they've got them on, I don't even think they're going after them for smoking. I think they're going after them for trespassing.
Oh, interesting.
Because they were where they were told.
It says Farron Field closed April 20th, noon to 5. Video and photographic surveillance in use. So that you were warned, but that's the whole point of 420 is just kind of mass civil disobedience.
150
right?
rather damning photos. This looks like Nazi Germany. I got to blog this.
It's pure Gestapo, and they're paying $50.
$50. Hey, let me see if I can see anyone.
Turn in your friends. $50.
Right. Is it going to make society better for arresting these people?
I don't
no.
think so.
No, but you get $50 floating around.
Okay, hey, fine. I'll go get them.
I wonder how many of these people are turning themselves in for the $50 to buy more dope.
That's me. That's me. That's my bong. That's my chillum. I recognize it. Good Lord.
The fact that this is posted on a .edu website is ridiculous.
I think it's time to call it quits, ladies and gentlemen. But I have to say, we've managed to make a lot of hay out of very little news. I want to thank our friends at AOL Radio for providing the bandwidth for this questionable podcast, AOL.com/podcasting. Thanks, too, to all the people who really helped the show out. Our opening theme from Mark Blasco. I love the new opening theme. He's just rocking out on that one. Of course, Ashley Twitt, who does Doing the Twit every week on our show. Dorothy Yamamoto, who's feeling better, thank you. She's out of the hospital. We wish you the best, Dorothy. She did our Twit logo. And the Twit redesign is coming along very well with the site. We hope to have that up soon. Thanks to the folks at Archetype in Canada and Lullabot in the U.S. who are working hard on that. Dvorak.org/blog for John C. Dvorak's blog. DL.TV is where you can find Robert Heron and Patrick Norton. David Prager is a part of Revision 3, so they take some blame too at Revision3.com. One of those big announcements coming any day now?
Oh, speaking of the whole 420 thing, well, the broken, man, the broken's being done. We've shot some of the broken already. Oh,
is it a special 420, the broken?
No, it's not, but it's the broken, which is, you know.
Gosh, that's the originator, the original.
I know.
The original. Wow. Who's in the broken this time? Is it Dan and Kevin?
Oh, it's the same three. We got Dan, we got Kevin and Ramsey.
That's great. Ramsey's back.
Look for it in June.
All right. Thanks, everybody. Another Twit is in the can. We'll be right back.
And there's a
screen cap from
the
show.
Bottom. Image number 145. I think that she should be on the show.
Oh, great. Now we're rating women on
hot
the show.
Hot or not.
We've really sunk
the stoner's vision.
Oh, shoot. 145. I agree. She's not bad.
Wow. I didn't realize they were numbered.
All right. Now I'm typing the link.
Oh, God.
It's the heat, man. I'm telling you.
It is. It's just too warm here.
Independent journalist, Leo.
Yeah. I long for the days of the editorial committee, the editor-in-chief, the man in charge.
Days are over, thank God.
Oh, my God, Leo. We're narcs. We're all narcs. We have to cut this whole section out. This is horrible.
I know. I'll bleep out the numbers so they'll never know which one we like.
This Week in Tech. This Week in